This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Luc-Olivier Dumablet.
And I'm Yannick Magnan.
And what's our topic for this week, Yannick?
Apple Vision Pro.
Ooh, but before we start, there is an administrative note that I need to do. So, as mentioned in our last episode, we will have a 2023 summer hiatus, and it will begin after the release of episode 211 on July 30th, and we will be back in September, to be exact, on September 10th with episode 212. So, if you don't hear our beloved voices during the summer, stay put. We will be back because we will be enjoying quite a break during the month of August. Now that is out of the way, let's go into the follow-up section.
All right, so my first piece of follow-up is for episode 174, which was about the 2021 Game of the Year. And on that episode, we talked about my 2021 Game of the Year runner-up, Tetris the Absolute Grandmaster 2 Plus, which is now available digitally for the very first time on Switch, PS4, and PS5 via Hamster's Arcade Archive series. This is one of the best Tetris games ever made, so you should definitely grab it if you're a fan of Tetris. And this is the game that features the two-player cooperative Tetris mode, where you each control a piece on a shared playfield. The last 12 months have been a great time for TGM fans because, as you may remember, TGM 1 dropped all the way back in December, and now TGM 2 came out. So maybe if we get enough support, we can get a port of TGM 3 Terror Instinct and complete the series, or maybe that can convince the Tetris company to let Eureka make a proper TGM 4 because they've been trying for years and they keep getting slapped on the wrist by the Tetris company, which really sucks. Big time for TGM fans. Also, what's really funny about the TGM games is that it's such a small community that when I go to the leaderboards, I see people I know on them next to me. It's really funny. It's really great. You get a real sense of community hanging out on the TGM leaderboards. So definitely recommend you pick that up if you're interested in arcade Tetris for any reason. And then I want to briefly talk about episode 206, Kids and Grandmas, which was about Xbox's rough past few months, because a story came out that revealed the developers at Arkane Austin, who didn't want to work on Redfall, which, as you may remember, was the disaster of a game that Xbox shipped last month. Well, they didn't want to work on Redfall, and 70% of the staff left during development, which is quite an amount of developers. It seems like higher-ups were being pressured into making a game as a service, even though it's not at all within the skill set of Arkane Austin or what they're known for anyway. And there was a lot of pushback, and management didn't want to comply with that pushback, so everybody left. So maybe that's why the game is shit. And sort of related to that, we were talking about how like Xbox hadn't really had any promising events recently to show off games, and they were saying look forward to our summer showcase, and they had their summer showcase and it was surprisingly good. I keep forgetting that Sega and Microsoft are best friends now, so there was a surprising amount of Japanese developer support, largely thanks to Sega and Sega's ownership of Atlus, because they announced two Persona games and an almost Persona game. They announced that they showed a new trailer for the new Yakuza game, so it was kind of wild. I think there was also a new Sonic game that they showed off at the same time. So lots of great Sega stuff, and Sega... at least Sega of Japan has been killing it recently. Sega of America, we could say other things. So it was very exciting, and I definitely found it to be a more exciting event than Sony's PS5 showcase. However, there is something a bit misleading about this Xbox event. None of these games are Xbox exclusives.
Okay, that was my first question. But my second question, I would like you to elaborate about Microsoft and Sega to be kind of friends now. I guess I don't follow too much gaming news, so maybe that's why I'm kind of didn't see that.
Yeah, this has been the case since about 2020, when they announced that Phantasy Star Online 2 would finally be coming to North America, because the context around PSO2 is PSO2 is a game that launched in Japan in 2012, I believe, and the implication was, oh yeah, one day we'll launch it in English, and then 2020 came and it still wasn't out, and it sort of became a meme. Like, my friends and I always talk about PSO2 in North America and post skeletons to Twitter. Well, back when we used to do Twitter. So it had reached meme status of, like, this translation is never going to happen. And then Xbox was just super desperate for Japanese games, and they were like, fuck it, we'll just pay you to release PSO2 on Xbox and PC exclusive for a year. And they did so, and they also said, oh, by the way, since you're an MMORPG, we'll give you free servers on Azure to host your shit. That was cool too. Ever since then, Sega has become more and more of a presence in Microsoft's events. And, like, this time it was kind of crazy. So there was the Persona 3 remake that was announced, although that had leaked accidentally thanks to Atlus posting it to their Instagram a few days early. There was Persona 5 Tactica, which is a new Persona Tactics game, which looks interesting, but I'm not sure about that art style. And there was another game by the Persona studio, which is not Persona branded, and it has some fucked up name I can't remember, but it's essentially fantasy Persona, where instead of having, like, hip urban teenagers, it's just, like, people with swords and mages and shit. And it looks amazing, of course, because they're crazy UI designers. You had Yakuza and I think the Sonic game. So that was, like, five Japanese games in there. And those weren't even the only games. Like, there was Forza that was shown, the new Forza was shown off. They showed off the new Fable. I'm not a super big fan of Fable, but they have one of the main characters of the IT crowd, Richard Ayoade.
Ooh,
is actually a main character in Fable, I think.
Huh.
So that was really weird.
As a voice actor?
He is facially mapped into the game, so he looks like himself. But wow, he's not himself. He's a fantasy character, but yeah. So they had a lot of really interesting stuff. Flight Simulator 2024 is fucking crazy, too. That's the most tempting thing I saw in the whole event.
It seems we are on a good track of having episodes that gets quote-unquote invalidated mere days after we release them or things like that.
Yeah, but the thing I was touching on is, like, all of the third-party games that were announced as part of this event, they're not Xbox exclusives.
Because I remember you talked to me about Persona and the PS5.
Yes, so all of these games, exclusives are last year's news. This year's news is day one Game Pass. All of the games that they announced during that event will be available on Game Pass on day one, which is insane. But they've been doing this for the past two or three events. They've just been saying, like, all of the games you're going to be seeing trailers for here are going to be available on Game Pass on day one. And that value proposition is getting better every year.
Right. Huh. And you know what? I'm sure we don't get the full details on those contracts, but, like, I would like to know how is Microsoft pushing to get game developers to release their big titles. I don't want to say AAA games because, again, I don't know yet.
A lot of them are AAA games.
Okay.
And the way they're doing it is pretty simple. They're paying shit tons of money to the developers and losing money on Game Pass hand over fist.
Yeah, that's, you know what, that's what I assumed was happening, but I would have liked a confirmation, which seems that you just provided. But yeah, this is an interesting thing, right? If to go back to what you were describing in the last episode about Xbox from Phil Spencer, say we're trying, more or less his point was, say we're trying to win the next generation, and we think the next generation is not the next generation of console, but the next generation of gaming, which is not VR, but cloud gaming. So we're trying to win that. And I guess they're putting money where their mouth is.
Yep. And I'm super excited for my friends who have Xboxes and Game Pass who are going to be getting all of those great games basically for free because that's kind of what life is over there. Whereas on the Sony side, we get, like, three-year-old games added to the service every month.
Right.
Anyway, that's enough about Xbox for now. So let's get into the main topic. So in a strange thing, usually, as you know, listener, we aren't very topical on this podcast. However, I had really nothing else to talk about.
You? Nothing else to talk about? Oh, I cannot believe that such statement.
I had something planned for next month, and it could not work this month. So
that's okay.
In the meantime, I had to find a filler subject. Luckily, Apple announced a product just so that we could talk about it on the show.
No, to be fair, I guess listener will be the judge of that, but I wouldn't call it or put an adjective of calling it a filler episode, but we shall see. It's time to look at the timestamp and see all we're ranting about or raving about this product announcement.
Right. So the long-rumored Apple Vision Pro was finally announced. You've probably seen it everywhere because everybody's either raving about it or complaining about it, as you do. It's an Apple product, you know, the usual. And it is a mixed reality display, not a display, headset, but I guess it technically also doubles as a display that is being positioned as a spatial computer, which is a really interesting way to call it. The head of previously the ARKit team and now Apple Vision, Mike Rockwell, was on John Gruber's The Talk Show, and I would highly recommend you go listen to that episode as well if you want additional context on the product.
I would suggest to watch it.
Yes.
For the rare occasion, there is a recording. The talk show live, is worth watching the YouTube recording.
Definitely. And especially with Sandwich Video's top-notch production quality for this production, it was really good. But yeah, so it was announced. I was watching it live. I also have the very interesting coincidental timing of working on a head-mounted display project at work at the same time as this was being rumored and announced. And while I definitely can't talk about the specifics of that project at all, I can definitely offer some expertise from trying to develop one of these things myself over the past few months.
And I guess that's not spoiling anything, but wishing you had Apple budget to do so sometimes.
And timeline, because
yes.
As Mike Rockwell sort of slipped during the talk show, they've been working on this for 8 years.
Yeah, and to me, it wasn't clear if it was the headset or the underlying technology. Because again, I think one thing we brought up when you made me realize that he said that, and because you watched it first, right? And I watched maybe a week later. And when it was during his segment, I was like, oh yeah, it's true. He kind of just drops that like nobody's business. It's just like a small nugget from his, I think, 35 minutes or 40 minutes section. I'd say it's a big chunk of the nearly 2 hour podcast.
Yeah. I think it kind of includes all of the AR initiatives at Apple since ARKit shipped basically 6 years ago.
Right.
So it would make a lot of sense if it encompassed all of that. But I'm sure that was happening maybe in parallel with the very first steps of developing this product. It's not clear, like, we don't know the full story, obviously, of like what came first. It was the Apple Vision Pro that came first, and they were like, we need to get these APIs in the OS now so people start being accustomed to the idea of using AR in iOS. I don't know. But it's definitely interesting to get that little factoid dropping out of nowhere. So there has also been a bunch of commentary, and I know you haven't listened to this morning's ATP because...
Nope.
Yeah.
I'm not that late on my podcast queue. I'm listening to Upgrade, just to give you perspective.
Yeah, so you're a few days back.
Yes.
Right. But like, there has been additional commentary as well as about like Apple's attitude towards certain classes of applications, which we'll get into a little bit later. And earlier today, MKBHD also posted a really interesting word about the video about the words that Apple are not using to talk about their headset, which is very interesting as well. So we can... these are all additional media you can consume and listen to us talk about these sort of aspects throughout the show. We don't really have any strict structure, but I do think that there are basically two aspects to this product to discuss, maybe three. The technology behind it, which I think is, everyone can agree this is fascinating technology. Well, actually, not everybody. I've seen people on Mastodon who are like, this shit sucks. Someone is making a 12K headset. It's better than Apple's. and we can talk about that later.
Yes, we will.
There is the product itself. Like, is this a compelling product, a compelling price point? Does it have a market? Does it have a purpose? All that shit. And then there's sort of also like three, which is like developer approach to some degree. And I think that kind of goes hand in hand with the product to some degree, but not so much. So how about we start with technology? Do you want to start to talk about how you feel about the technology?
I guess. I don't want to start with this, but I can't. Where do you want to talk about the price? I guess I'm sorry
to
reply.
I wanted to talk about it in product.
Okay, perfect. And I'll keep that for product. We've started to get a bit of nuggets. So like we're at the time of recording, we're like about 10 days since the official introduction and the fact that this device is not shipping until next year. I guess that's going to also be discussed in the product section. Means that we do have tech specs. I think I remember in the talk show they mentioned that there was a tech spec page.
It's not up yet for the headset.
Right. I remember Gruber saying that, but I was like, I think that's up for the Max, but not for this. So, but I think the big nugget that we've heard is the, what was it? Oh, it's the size of pixels of the displays that are like super tiny. Mm-hmm. I forgot the exact measure, and I think it's even in microns or something like that. Like, I just saw the headlines this week. I was like, oh, okay, that explained the 23 million pixels that they mentioned and things like that.
To be fair, I just want to say you always measure pixels in microns for these kinds of displays. Like, this is not something special. Like, Apple is not special for saying that their pixel size is in microns because, like, we literally do it too. And we don't have
Fair.
Anywhere near the comparable specs, but...
Right, but wasn't it the... Okay, I get that the scale is correct, or the unit scale is correct, but I think people were saying that even in microns, they're tiny pixels.
Yes, of course.
Okay, that again, all of this is to say is that I remember that we are starting to see real technical specification that are not what Apple has publicly said in the keynote. That might just be people starting to have more information that now that officially the product is out, some sources that are a bit more talkative. But I guess I'm kind of going into opinion, but it looks technically speaking impressive.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of don't care about it, but we'll keep that for later, I guess.
That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of the tech that is pretty neat. Like, I think the way they're thinking about how to integrate the front-facing displays kind of, again, goes into how they see this product relate to your personal life, I would say. Because all the examples we've seen, right, is this device is in your home, more or less, or in the airplane, which I guess that's the main thing. I haven't flown for years at this point, but I was like, airplane? Huh. Hopefully it doesn't require airplane Wi-Fi. I think that was...
I don't think so.
Yeah, that was something that was left for Watcher to figure out. But hopefully if there's enough onboard storage, I have videos and things like that. I was like, oh yeah, that's... I really, really understand why it makes sense. Much more than that about the tech, I think it's a great summary, or it's more of a great agglomeration of everything that Apple is great at tech-wise. The design, the physical aspect of it, again, we were not at WWDC, so we didn't touch one. But from all the pictures we've seen, it seems to be like a typically well-designed product from Apple, well thought, using great materials. It kind of looks like a big Apple Watch because the sides of the front, I'll call it glasses because it kind of looks like ski goggles, right? Or goggles.
Yeah.
The sides where it's not the eyepieces or the front display seems to be all aluminum. Hopefully not stainless steel, but I guess from photos it looked like aluminum. And the same physical design cues that you would see on the Max with the grills or with the holes from the Apple Watch. So it is really a familiar modern Apple product in its design technicalities. Again, it's full of glasses and I'm not surprised, like front facing screen, plus the eyepiece, the fabric used for the elements. Like, it all felt like, okay, we took the design person or the person that is sourcing fabric for watchband. Okay, come here. We need you. You have to figure out the head band that attaches around your head. Oh, and also I think they call it the light shield, or the pieces that goes on top of the eye elements, right?
Mm-hmm.
Go figure out which material we should use there. And then combining with the display technologies. I think now, quote unquote, rumors are kind of saying that, yeah, those displays are not made by Apple, but kind of the Apple design is kind of what is slowly but surely showing out. It's not like we call Samsung and, hey, Samsung, we need those technology from your displays. No, they figure out the way to maybe ship their own displays and having somebody produce them like they do with the chips. And yeah, so to me, it is the, I don't want to say the normal version, but it makes sense when you take into consideration what Apple has been doing for the last 20 years.
Yeah, definitely. I think the Vision Pro, from an engineering point of view, is absolutely amazing. Because again, like, I'm trying to implement a headset with significantly less features than this. And we can't get anywhere close to that design, right? And obviously, like, we don't have the Apple budget and all that stuff, like we sort of hinted at earlier. But just the engineering chops you have to do to make something so slim that contains all of that functionality and all of that pixel density and all of that stuff, it is, I have no idea how they did it, which is completely baffling. I felt like the BlackBerry execs were like, no, this has to be fake. Like, the you know, like when the iPhone was being announced for the first time, where people don't believe it because they're like, this technology doesn't make any sense. And that's kind of how I was watching it. So that is going to be informing a lot of the stuff that I'm going to be freaking out about. I think the display density is unreal, and it's even more unreal when you take into consideration that the computer that runs that display is inside the headset too. If you take a look at 8K or the 12K headset that I mentioned earlier, oftentimes you're going to be hooked up to a $4,000 to $7,000 PC, and you're going to be tethered to that PC to do it. This is a portable thing that goes on your head that has that machine that is running that headset right on it. And I think there are definitely concerns that the $4,000 to $7,000 PC that is running the 8K to 12K VR headsets for games on the PC are going to be capable of pushing that to a much further degree than you can with Vision Pro. But the fact that it can do it at all is kind of shocking. I'm speechless just thinking about it.
Right.
And it's battery powered too. I know it's a 2-hour battery, right? Everyone's bitching about the 2-hour battery.
Which I think, I'm not about to say it's a fair bitching. I think it kind of is though, because something had to give, and they decided that they don't want you to have like a battery belt or things like that. Nor would they want it to be tethered like what I was about to say, is the PSVR the only VR headset you experience? Because for me, it is.
No. I did also wear the Vive when I did Mario Kart VR.
Oh, okay. But the HTC Vive was also tethered.
Yes.
Right. So my point was to say, my understanding is they realized that the tethered experience is not so great, but right now in Gen 1, that's the best, or that's what they felt, technically speaking, they could do as much as of an untethered experience, which is you have a cable that goes from your temple to a battery pack in your pocket, and then guess what? If you want to have more than 2 hours, there's your USB-C port under the battery pack, so sucks to be you, and then just plug it in. Which for a lot of the demos that they've shown, having it tethered makes a lot of sense, right? Because there was not that much gaming shown.
Right. And I think maybe that's more of a developer strategy thing, but there have been, like, this morning on ATP, someone wrote in anonymously and said, I used to work on the Vision Pro team, and Mike Rockwell hates games. So,
wow. Okay.
And someone sort of brought up that if you listen back to what he says on the Shock Show, he's like, we don't want this to be a toy. We want this to be a tool. And you can sort of hear, like, the disdain for games in there. And I think it's really interesting as well that, like, the integration they're doing with the Unity game engine is not actually gaming related at all. It's for the environments feature where you're immersed in a virtual space. You can develop those with Unity, but you can't. They didn't say anything about making games with Unity, which is really interesting.
Yeah, no, it is. Because the thing I was not expecting at all, to be honest, is that I'm getting a lot of the HoloLens. Was that the name from the Microsoft product, right? It's the HoloLens, right? I'm getting a lot of the HoloLens vibe from this product. But for sure, Apple is not an enterprise market, an enterprise company, so they target consumers with a consumer twist to it.
And the HoloLens was like an incredibly small window of the overall field of view that you could actually project things on. Like when you were playing Minecraft, it looked like you had a small windowed version of Minecraft hovering over your vision. It didn't actually look like you were inside of Minecraft. Whereas I think Vision Pro, from all the reports we've gotten, you are in the space that that is augmented. You are not looking at a window of an augmented space, which is very different.
Yeah, true, true. But you do have a lot of windowed experience from what we've seen, what you've played with Vision Pro. Like, there's a lot of windows, which I was not expecting, to be honest. But it seems that it's a virtual space where you can put things in.
Yeah, and that sort of brings me to not really the developer strategy, but the sort of the thing that people are not mentioning about Vision Pro that is super important, because, and it's top of mind for me because it's something I would have appreciated for my head-mounted display project, which is right now the only software development frameworks that exist for head-mounted displays at all are game engines. If you want to make an application that is running within MetaQuest 2 or in Oculus Rift or in an HTC Vive or even HoloLens to some degree, like, the only APIs that exist that let you write applications that are native to like stereoscopic vision and having two displays for each of your eyes and stuff like that, the only APIs that exist to do that exist in game engines. Like, Windows and whatever the fucking UI framework is called for Windows these days, I don't even know. It changes every month.
True.
Whatever it's called. It's called Electron, if you're being honest.
I guess some might say the same about the Mac, huh?
I know. But that doesn't have, like, built-in support for, like, making UIs for head-mounted displays. Right now, in the application I'm working on for my head-mounted display, we have two windows that are OpenGL rendering contexts, and I manually have to do all of the stuff to make certain things stereoscopic. I have to manually do a bunch of stuff to make it look good in the headset, and that is a lot of overhead for app developers who are used to working on normal-ass 2D displays to have to do, just to have an application that is presentable, right? And I think the secret sauce in what Apple is doing is because they're positioning this as a spatial computer, they have a fully baked UI framework that just works, and you don't have to be a game developer to do it, right? You look at medical companies who are developing applications for within head-mounted displays in VR headsets, they all have to learn Unreal Engine or your Unity, right? And it's fucking crazy because, like, you shouldn't have to care about like addressing graphics hardware and all of that stuff to just get an application running on these headsets. And right now, Apple is the only platform that is providing a fully baked solution for making apps for these kinds of headsets. And if you are trying to make non-game applications, it's sort of the only game in town right now, unless you want to learn Unity and make like a word processor in Unity or something. I don't know. Maybe you're that crazy. I'm not. So I thought, like, that's the story that's not being covered here. Like, it's nice. Like, yes, you can make the case. You can make the case that other companies are more technologically advanced in terms of the actual headset tech than Apple. But in terms of giving developers an experience that they can just run with without any pre-existing knowledge about optics, about how the eyes work, about interpupillary distance, about all of these concepts that you need to know, you can just say, hey, I want a window. I want to put a button on the window. I want to have a web view in the window. Boom, I have my app. That's not something any other headset allows you to do. And I think it's very important to the success of this product.
Right. And again, I will caveat this by saying I watch zero Vision OS session from WWDC.
Actually, I watched one. But
okay, so that's one more than me, literally. But again, a lot of the marketing, if I can say so, around it is say, take your iPad written in UIKit and Swift UI and just run it in the space. In the Vision Pro space computing environment. So use the frameworks you know and love, and then you can make applications for our headset. So I think that's interesting because of what you said is it's using a language or a UI framework made to do application and that adapts. Again, professing that I don't really know what are the changes in SwiftUI or UIKit to make that happen.
Yeah, you can declare like basically surfaces that you can project windows and views on, basically in a virtual space. And then if you want to, you can also declare an environment which can be a 3D, not a 3D model, but like a 3D environment. It's like literally a Unity scene, basically, from what they are talking about. That your virtual screens and all of that can be a part of if you want to close off the user from the outside world. Otherwise, they're just going to be within their actual physical space. So yeah, for technology, I think we've kind of done it. And I think we can kind of transition this into product and pricing. Because I think the way to do the segue is that for the technology you are getting, $3,500 is a miraculous price. And I mean, it's probably very close to cost. I don't know what Apple's volume deals are. I'm sure they get a great deal. But I have no trouble believing the rumors that say that this is being sold at cost and they're not making a profit on this. They're just trying to get it out there so that people develop apps for them. I fully believe that because knowing what I do, this shit is not cheap.
Right, but I remember the rumors, and again, I haven't looked at the more recent ones, that when they were saying that, they were saying, oh, we believe the headset will be cost-wise, around like $1,500 USD to $2,000. So if they are around the $2,000 to $2,500 range, like that would imply they have like lower profit margin than before. So I'm eager to see, once we know the components and things like that, like, is it really true or not? I guess if we talk about the price right now, I can get behind this argument. And maybe it's because this is not a field right now of technology that interests me greatly. Mm. But $3,500, especially USD, it's really going to be 5K here. Like, it's going to be crazy expensive here. Even if I can get behind the argument that the technology is worth that. This tech will take us over and then be the replacement of the smartphone in the smartphone era. It's kind of like, yeah, that's expensive to be that, right? So I'm eager to see how long will it take for this technology to be less expensive. Yeah, I don't get me wrong. I'm eager to try it, and I'm sure some friends will spend those FT price to buy it. but I guess mark my words. But right now, even after the demos and things like that, like I'm like the price is too expensive. So don't get me wrong. Like I'm not even buying a Meta Quest or whatever. Yeah, it's a Meta Quest, right?
Yeah,
the one that was announced like 2 weeks ago by
Meta Quest 3. Yeah,
no matter how costly. And even that, like at $500, like, oh yeah, it's like at $500 USD, it's more in the, oh yeah, like I want to spend something on a nice gadget, like, and nice gadget these days are not $100. So, that would be that. So it's interesting. Again, I think the price shocked a lot of people, myself included, because the rumors were more in the 25 to 3,000 range. And now it's like 3,500. It was kind of a, oh, wow, okay, that's an expensive beast. But yeah, I guess we'll see. The other thing that is interesting regarding price is, or price and launch, I would say, is the fact that it is US only in early 2024. Mm. And during the announcement, there was nothing about international markets, like Canada, for example. And I think regarding what I brought up in the technology section about the materials, about you having, if especially you, if you're a glass wearer or you have eye sensibilities, like they need to do tests to ensure that they sell you the headset with the appropriate Zeiss lenses. So I'm assuming that a bit like the watch, but even more than the watch, this is not the product you want to buy online. You want to go to the Apple store, go through not maybe the 30 minutes demo, but I'm sure they'll have the boils down version to maybe 5 to 10 minutes, that it will be tuned for the eye traffic that is an Apple store, so that you can play with it, and then to scale that to different geographies, different market, that's going to take a bit of time, which again could explain why it's expensive, because they know they need to get the machine properly oiled for that to be deployed at 60 million units per quarter like they do with the iPhone, right?
Oh, definitely. Didn't
get there in one quarter, like, it took years. But I think they really want to control the narrative around that, especially how they will sell it to consumer, and having a special sell process at the Apple store seems pretty fitting for this Gen 1 product.
So I think the price is reasonable for the technology that's in it. I think given how they're positioning it as a computer, like, yes, it's expensive for an Apple computer, but there are expensive Apple computers, and I bought some of them. Like, I've already spent $3,000 on an Apple computer before. Like, I've never, that's not something I'm scared of doing. It's just, you have to justify it to me. And right now, I don't really see what this problem solves in my life, and therefore I am not really going to commit to spending $3,500 on something that doesn't really solve any problem I have. I'm sure it's super impressive, it's a fantastic demo, but realistically, what is it doing that I can't already do? And that's my issue with this whole product, is that it's, and there have been rumors related to this as well, right? It's that the rumors were saying that there were members of the development team for this product who were like, you can't ship this. There's no reason to have this. There's no killer app. There's no, it's just technology that's cool. Right. And you're going to present it to people, and you're going to hope that the wow factor of the technology is going to be impressive enough for people to give you $3,500 on its own, but you don't really justify its existence. And even the Apple Watch, which has evolved a lot since the original Apple Watch, like, they had a story. It was the wrong story in retrospect, but they had a story to try and sell people on it. This has no real story, or it's poorly communicated at the very least.
I would agree with that. And again, it was interesting to hear John Gruber make this argument of saying, oh, Apple doesn't, and I think in general, I agree that Apple doesn't ship technology, they ship product.
Mm-hmm.
And I think right now they are kind of, I wouldn't be surprised, they're kind of afraid of what happened with the Apple Watch. Yes, what, eight years, was it 2015 or 2016? I think it's, my memory it says 2015.
I think it's 2015, yeah.
Right. So 8 years in, this prod, yeah, it makes sense because 8 year kind of nine, and then we're at WatchOS 10. So that product had the story like you mentioned. In the end, what was its success was one tiny part that it was like cardio and training and then exercising that ended up being the spaghetti thrown at the wall that sticked. But yeah, right now it's like, okay, it can run my iPad apps. During the announcement and during the last week, there was a lot of joke about running off point of sale software in that. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh yeah, well, you go to the restaurant and then the waiter has your Vision Pro. Of course, we're trolling. But I see it as a cool tech, and maybe that's why I feel it lackluster. Again, without trying it, I think a lot of people came out of the demo speechless, and that's a lot of the reviews. But I kind of agree with you that it is the most Apple tech product that feel more like tech than product in a while.
Yeah.
Like in a long while. And I would have said that at first about the Apple Watch, but interestingly enough, at that time I saw the potential of the Apple Watch, and it's not that I'm not seeing the potential of it right now, but I kind of want I kind of want to see what's going to be the I think it was Stallman that was saying, like, Taro Stallman's like, the fact they name it Pro means that at some point there's going to be a Vision Air and a Vision SE, kind of like extrapolating the names and the lineups and things like that. But you know what? I think that's today on June 15th when we record this episode, that's kind of where I am at, is I want to see this product evolve, but I don't want to be the people that tries to evolve it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll let the people spend money. I'll let people say, oh, this sucks, this was good. I'm sure, like I mentioned, I have a friend in mind, hello Bert, that will buy it. So I'm sure I have an opportunity to try it at some point. And that's, you know what, like maybe I'll be like, oh yeah, it's cool. Why didn't I buy one? And you know what, at that point, maybe I'll change my mind. But right now, I don't see, not the need, but the importance as a gadgety person that I am, and I would consider that you are too,
yeah,
to be the trendsetter. And I don't want to sound too cheesy by saying trendsetter, but that's kind of what people are when they buy the gadget first and then kind of help the companies, or by saying, oh, this sucked, this was good, part of your Gen 1 product. It's helping to set the trend or where the future is for those technology.
And the thing that worries me about this product is because it's being positioned as a computer, like it's if you're actually listening to what they're pitching, it's sort of half a computer and half a display, right? Because it's a display for your iPad, it's a display for your Mac, but it's also a computer itself.
Hey, it's the Apple Studio Display for your eyes, because it's also an iPad and it's also a display.
It's true. But yeah, the problem with that is that, like, I already have a 4K display. I don't need to have portable 4K displays with me, I believe you can only have one 4K display anyway, right? I think there was some clarification, and you can't have like three 4K displays. You can have one.
Oh, when you connect it with your Mac?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess it's you have your Mac 4K display, and then you can have different app windows, not from the Mac, but from Vision OS itself, right?
Yeah, and I guess you can use, like, what's it called? Not Continuity, but Universal Control or whatever to sort of make that a unified experience or whatever.
Possibly, yeah.
I guess it's technically a Continuity feature, but, like, it's weird. It feels kind of disjointed, and I don't know if the reason that they're giving you like this this display technology to use with your Mac and your iOS devices is that because Vision OS, we already know, is going to be even more compromised than iPad OS is for productivity, because that's a bad sign. People are already complaining about how hard it is to get work done on the iPad. You want to give people an even more expensive computer to bitch about that it's not good enough for their day-to-day work and that they still have to rely on their Mac to do their work? Like, I don't know. I don't get the whole thing. It would have to be at least as capable as a Mac on its own to justify the $3,500.
Hey, in theory, though, I know it's kind of not really true, but in theory, this is a new Apple platform that you can develop its own app on it, because you can just show your Xcode screen or your Mac window, and then press run, and then it would boop, run in the display, which is already in your face. So I think unlike the iPad, at least it has that for itself.
And I think you can at least do part of the development of the, like, I think Reality Composer Pro now runs in Vision OS as well. So if you get a Vision Pro somehow, you could technically start developing things in Reality Composer directly within, not virtual reality, what do they call it? I guess a spatial computing environment, whatever the buzzword is. Mm-hmm. so that's interesting. But yeah, like, I don't know. It's expensive for what it does. I'm sitting in front of a 4K display right now. I don't need another 4K display for my Mac. I think there are people who are going to get a lot of use out of this, right? So CGP Grey was talking about on Cortex about how he travels to hotel rooms a lot, and he loves the idea of having like this setup he can bring with him that is not bringing an actual 4K monitor with him, but actually just bringing this headset thing and being able to work from the hotel room and always have this consistent setup. Totally understand that. And he already is used to doing like meetings in VR and stuff like that already with the MetaQuest anyway. So it's not a huge change to his workflow.
The torso zooms.
Yeah.
No, but I think this is a good point, right? Where you, this will allow you to not only bring your work computer, but it's kind of your work environment.
Yeah.
Especially if you're somebody traveling a lot because of said work. That it was interesting where a lot of the demos we've seen, like on their own, I think they're all concise, concrete. I would see myself using this feature. Maybe two that worth mentioning that I don't think feels that. The memory recording 3D videos weird. It's like, that's a bit too much like futuristic shitty world that to me was utterly, unpleasant as a section. Mm-hmm. And even the doubling down. Well, I shouldn't say double now, but even the yet again promotion of it doing the talk show was like, oh yeah, it's your memory, you feel goosebumps. I'm like, yeah, but like,
well, I believe them. I completely believe them. And like the reason you're uncomfortable about it is the same reason it was like a plot point in Cyberpunk 2077. Like, they call these memories brain dances in Cyberpunk.
Right.
And like, what do you expect the most popular brain dances to be? It's people getting killed and people having sex. It's like that's what the black market of brain dances is in that game. And
I'm not surprised.
Seeing that did not surprise me at all, knowing Apple. I'm pretty sure the nudity detector is going to complain if you try to film porn on it or something.
We all know that the first thing that's going to get filmed with this is from a porn studio. That's true. But again, what felt left me a bit uncomfortable is it was naively utopic. Oh yeah, you do that for memories. It's like, kind of, no, come on. We all know what will happen. So, and I think we're past, or I wish we are past creating technology that works in the utopic world, right? Because we all know it's going to get abused or misused, I should say, in this case. And I think the best comparison that allowed me to say, okay, it's not as creepy as I thought, was to say, hey, it's Gen 1 tech. We're kind of a bit of too young I was a child when that happens, but remember your dad, your uncle, your mom, having the camcorder on their shoulder and be like, oh yeah, we'll record your 2-year-old anniversary on the camcorder. And it's like, it was bulky again, for sure. That I am too young for this, but the one that you had the camera and then the recorder as a separate messenger bag. At least we possibly lived through the camcorder where those were into one thing on your shoulder. But those were clunky, and guess what? Now they're just an iPhone, right? And we all go to family parties or friends parties and then people filming everything. With phones, it's fine. I guess we'll get there, but first gen for this, it feels a bit weird because of that. And now I said I had two things, but now with this tangent about cameras and VCR,
went too long.
Yeah, I kind of forgot what was the other point.
While you think about it, I'm just going to mention something else, which is like I've been seeing a lot of people saying like it's worth $3,500 just for the price of just for being able to view shit on a big screen, and I'm like, really? Like you have a lot more disposable income than me. I don't even have a TV.
You do have a nice 4K monitor. That
I do have a nice 4K monitor. It's nicer than a TV, let's be honest. But
I guess.
I like IPS more than OLED. Yes, don't sue me.
I know.
But yeah, like, I don't know. It's not for me. I'm not a big movie watcher and all of that stuff. And like the...
Okay. No, sorry. Go continue. But it clicked. What was the other thing?
No, I forgot what I was going to say. You can go.
I'm so sorry. But the other thing that is kind of a bit utopic and things like that was your Memoji, not Memoji. I forgot. It's your persona, they call it.
Right.
The fact that they want you to be on a FaceTime call, again, all the environment and then all the lock-in and things like that. But hey, what happens when you're in a FaceTime call and you're not wanting to hold your phone and you're in the headset? Like, you would look weird. So let's make a fake you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that, I think, people have mentioned that what they've shown was really like early tech, but that it was humanely enough, if I can say so. Like, it didn't look like a robot acting up. Or like a robot moving. It kind of felt natural, the face movement and things like that. So for that, it is interesting. But for sure, the fact that it doesn't look like you, or it really looked like a poor representation of you and not really the way I would see you in flesh if we were FaceTiming, for example, I kind of feel that it should have been Memojis. It should have been a Memoji representation of you just for that.
I feel like this is just Memoji 2.0, right? That's how I felt about it when I first saw it, is that this is just Memoji 2.0.
But Memoji has a kind of playfulness to them that it's kind of like, I guess it's a better version of you, me, from the Wii.
Yeah.
Which Miis always looked weird. Even if you were like, I know people were like artists at making a like a clone of you as a Mii, but you always looked creepy still.
Oh, I hate Memoji. I would much rather use a Mii than a Memoji.
Really? Oh, come on. I'm completely the inverse. I love Memojis. I think a lot of people are doing amazing job, and they feel like fun, playful, and also kind of a good way to represent you. When I see friends that have really excel at creating their own Memojis, like I really like those more than the creepy eye you would get to a Mii. Those always creeped me out.
But the problem for me is I've never actually been able to make a Memoji that looks like me at all. Like, it never looks like me. It looks like a little kid who looks like me, but it doesn't look like me. And with a Mii, I was able to make it look exactly like me. The problem is, like, now I've lost them. I have lost it. I need to, like, get the QR code off my 3DS or something to actually, like, get it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I'm just much more capable with the Mii tools than the Memoji tools. The Memoji tools, I just look like shit all the time, so I hate them.
So coming back to those to me were the two kind of functionalities that I felt that were like a bit too utopic about them. But the rest, like I could see myself, hey, you know what? Like Apple, 10 years after the hype of 3D TVs, have shipped or are about to ship in 6 months, give or take, the best 3D TV on the planet.
Yep, best 3D TV and probably one of the best 3D cameras as well.
Possibly. So that is a use case that, again, as a, I don't call myself a TV nerd, but somebody that likes to have a good TV, I could see that, you know what, like I would replace my TV in, but again, it's rare that I watch things alone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And let's not make creepy jokes about the things you try to watch alone to go back to this, but I digress. But the idea is, though, this is a good functionality that I see. Oh yeah, you know what? I see that. Like, would I like to reply to my texts, answer my emails through that. It's like, you know what? Like, not really right now. But, like, if it's a nice benefit, if it's my kind of, I'm watching TV and, or I'm watching a movie and then I want a better experience, like, I can see that as a benefit there. The other examples that we've seen, though, are like, oh, well, they're nice to have, but they are not like the killer feature, is what I'm saying. I think the killer feature is really the TV experience to me.
Wow.
What do you think is the killer experience for you and what has been announced?
I don't think there's any individual feature of this that actually interests me that much, because I think the thing I would primarily be interested in would be gaming, but it's not there, right?
Right.
So, like, that's kind of a turnoff, and I haven't seen anything, like, trying to sell me, like, get this to use your Mac. Like, I can already use my Mac. Fine. I don't need this.
Yes.
I show me apps that work on Vision OS, and maybe then I'll be sold on it. But right now, they haven't really done anything to sell me. And I think the thing that they have that is the, like, you're going to hate it, but I think the 3D camera is the biggest deal in this entire thing, because yes, while it is socially awkward, I do believe them when they say people film things with their kids and their loved ones and they start crying when they put on the headset. I completely believe that. I think if the tech is good enough, it's going to cause that.
Right.
And I think that's the thing that people are going to have the strongest emotional reaction to if you actually demo the headset to them.
Though, don't get me wrong, I think the fact that those 3D cameras are on the headset is part of the problem. And you know what? I know for 3D that you have to have at least two cameras fairly spaced apart. So what I'm about to say might be literally impossible to do, but I'm all ears. Like, give me the iPhone that has that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Give me it to like yesterday. And I think you're correct by saying the fact that they will have the best 3D cameras to shoot 3D videos is gonna be game changer. Like, you don't have to be an IMAX camera and then have like too much money to just shoot a film using those equipment to have something that I wouldn't be surprised is gonna be crazy to watch, even on a 2D plane, like watching it back on your phone.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. I think, unfortunately, it's going to look worse on the phone, probably.
Probably.
Because that's just how things go. But I think I'm not convinced that putting the cameras on the phone is a good idea. Remember that you're going to be watching it through the headset. Or at least the emotional experience that they're selling is you're going to be watching this through the headset. And the problem is you can hold your phone wherever. And the position you are going to be seated in or resting in to actually be watching this, if it does not match up with where the camera was held, it's going to fuck you up inside the headset. You need to be aware of the positioning of the person relative to the viewing experience and all of that. Like, there's actual fuckery that you could, like, you don't want people to get motion sick because you put the camera on the phone instead of the headset, right? But that's a real concern. So I think there are issues with that. And I think putting it on the headset is probably the best solution. The problem is you look like an idiot when you're filming things with it. And you feel removed from, or at least people are speculating that you feel removed from the situation when you do so. Or that others are going to see you like a weirdo because you're wearing this thing on your face and there's a physical barrier and whatever. Like, I think that's also kind of a Western thing. Like, there might be different hangups in different cultures. To some degree, it's always going to be creepy. And like I said, it's in Cyberpunk for a reason. It's fucking weird, man.
Right.
But there's a reason it's a part of that kind of like cyberpunk literature, is that it is simultaneously terrifying and amazing. And I think we're in that world right now. Like, the Cyberpunk 2077, it's not 2077, it's 2023 right now. We're living it. Like, the Cybertruck, well, Cybertruck hasn't shipped, but like, the self-driving cars are on the way. We have this headset thing that can do brain dances. Like, all of the pieces are here. We have the weird advertising surveillance state with Google and Facebook and all that shit. Like, it's all here right now. You don't need to play a video game to experience that dystopia. We're living in it right now. And it honestly, as an Apple fan, it kind of sucks to see Apple participating in that. But at the same time, I understand that it's part of their business, right? They have to find the thing that's going to cannibalize the phones, and they have to jump on it before everybody else does and do it better than everyone else. It's just, I'm not sure I believe that this is the future of computing. And I think we have gotten, I think like the last decade or so has proven the dangers of too much ubiquitous computing and too much ubiquitous internet and
facility of connection,
because facility of connection is good, but algorithms getting involved with everything. Like, there's a lot of danger related to that, and I think a lot of us in the industry are taking a step back and saying, what can we do to actually make the world a better place? And then you have Apple sort of saying, hey, look at our cool headset, we can do brain dances, aren't we cool? And it's just like, oh, is there any hope left for the big companies anymore? I don't know.
I cannot say it better myself.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the developer situation? I guess we kind of touched on it earlier. So it's really strange, right? They're positioning this as a spatial computer. They're targeting mostly app developers, not game developers. It's strange.
Yeah, I'm not sure I have much more than that to say, because I haven't watched any, and I'm not, I guess maybe it's part of the next episode. I'm not sure I'll watch Dub Session about this year. I don't think it's...
I think we're going to have a very interesting WWDC episode, because honestly, this was one of the most boring WWDCs in terms of session content that I've seen. But I don't want to get into that, because I want to push it to the...
let's keep that for the next episode.
I feel like there's not much but Vision OS to be curious about, though. But again, we'll get back to it next episode.
We'll get back to it. One thing I wasn't aware of, like, I heard like Unity during the presentation. I was like, okay, I guess that's what they do for gaming. But the fact that you said, no, it's not...
It's not a gaming story. It's a 3D environment story.
Right. The thing to me that now, compared to especially what people have said that they do in the demo, is like, where would you build an experience like, spoiler alerts, the dinosaur experience that they've shown, not in the demo at Dub, but at the demo people were allowed to do, where it's more 3D content living in the space and not be stuck in a box, right? Even if the description that a lot of people have said is this dinosaur demo is kind of content coming out of this window in your space. And for this, I think that's where we'll kind of protrude into gaming, but it doesn't seem to be gaming as virtual reality, where you're in a different world where the game itself takes over your vision. It's just that it might just be yet another window in your space.
Right. And one of the things that MKBHD mentioned in his video about like the no words for this product is that Apple has never said virtual reality with relation to this project. They have been very careful not to say virtual reality.
Right.
And like, his theory is that you don't want something bad to happen with the Meta Quest 3, for example, because Facebook is being creepy, and then VR as a whole is damaged reputationally because of their actions, and therefore distance yourself from that. I think there's some reality to that, but I think also just virtual reality is not the goal of this device. It's literally to be a spatial computer like they say it, and it can do quote virtual reality in limited contexts, but that is not the primary use case of the product. It's kind of a weird side use case, which is why it's kind of I listen to a lot of gaming podcasts, and I hear a lot of disappointment with relation to this thing. First of all, because of the price. People are like, it's crazy. It costs $3,500. It has 2 hours of battery life. It's fucking crazy. And you can't even play games on it. So I understand the outrage. But I don't know. It's just weird. It seems like a massive blind spot. And it's especially dissonant with sort of the push of the Mac towards the gaming industry at the same WWDC, where they had literally Kojima come out on stage announcing Death Stranding for the Mac. And you're like, okay, so that's happening on the Mac. What's the gaming story for Vision OS? And the story is, we don't like games. And it's like, okay, we're right back where we started.
Yeah. Okay, again, I didn't listen to ETP. The fact that a tipster brought this up makes sense, but it's weird with the we love gaming on the Mac vibe that is being pushed right now. So I'm interested to see how this gaming on Apple products evolves for Vision OS, because for sure it has to happen in some fashion. And I'm eager to see how it will, I'll use the word spin here, how it will be spin, taking into consideration that right now in day, let's say, minus one, slowly but surely we'll get to day minus 0.5, and then we'll be at day zero early next year. How this journey for gaming evolves, because that's what people are used to right now for quote unquote spatial interaction, is more or less playing in a game where it transports you in a different environment. Which, if you think about it, a lot of the meditation, a lot of, oh, we want you to, like, you can watch your TV or watch your content or, like, do work in your current spatial environment. But if you want to be, like, focused or relaxed, like, we can give you, like, a beach scenery or a cottage near a lake scenery to kind of change your idea. Like, to me, that's VR. Like, if it...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
I know the kind of thing that maybe on your peripheral vision, you still see your world, but it, like when you, because you can, the way it has been described by a lot of people is you can like change the boundaries of this virtual space. Let's call it this way and not call it VR. And my understanding from the description of others that even when you crank it to 11, if you closely look in the corners, you still kind of see your world. You, like it's a blur. No, but it's not like a hard line, but it's still a blurry, like, oh, you know what, like it's not fully immersive.
It's like, right? You're inside a snow globe,
kind of. Yeah, kind of. That's like, you know, you're stuck in that, but again, you know that, hey, you know what, like it's not your new world right now, it's just something to help you focus. So I'm eager to see what will it take, or if again it's just a limitation of the current demos, to get a virtual space created with this headset, like the current VR experience that we know.
Yeah, definitely. I know the UI team at our company is very interested in picking up one of these when they come out in Canada. And I think I will be on the first bus to Montreal the day they get it to go try it out. Because I made the case to my boss that I am the person most qualified in the office to use Apple developer tools if we ever need to develop for this.
That's a good way to sell it.
Yes. So I am excited to mess around with this technology, especially now that I know how fucking complicated this shit is to get right. I have a massive amount of appreciation for all of the engineering that's gone into this product. But I am definitely not willing to sacrifice a Japan trip just to use my Mac in a headset instead of what's right in front of me right now.
You know what? That is totally fair. And I had this a similar thought saying, okay, I'm struggling to consider spending $3,000 on digital bodies for cameras that I would use more nowadays. So even if I'm struggling to justify this, like I'm usually like, oh, it's too expensive, but it would be nice, but it's too expensive. Like, can you imagine this product? And it's like, L to the no. I'm not considering that in my budget. So yeah, it seems for me too that it is a technology that I'm really curious about, but that I'm totally fine with living from afar for now.
Yeah. And that's it.
Good. It's unclear if we'll have a lot of show notes for this episode, but once we do, you can find all the show notes for this episode at limitlesspossibility.net/208, so 208. You can find our complete back catalog of episodes at limitlesspossibility.net. The show is on Fediverse. We are at limipo_podcast. That's L-I. MIPO underscore podcast at mastodon.social. I always forget the latter part. You can also find us in individually there too. I am at Luco at Mastodon Social. That's L-U-C-C-O. And you can find Yannick at
Sakarina at icosahedron.website.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.